Hey all, welcome back to the Real Life Pharmacology Podcast. I'm your host, Pharmacist Eric Christensen. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen. Hopefully you pick up a few clinical pearls today. With that said, I do want to mention reallifepharmacology.com. Go snag your free top 200 study guides, 31-page PDF. Simply get it just for subscribing. We send you updates on when we've got new content, new podcasts, and things of that nature. So definitely go check that out, reallifepharmacology.com. All right, so the drug I wanted to cover today is dulaglutide. And so the brand name of this medication is Trulicity. And it's medication used in the management of type 2 diabetes. So mechanistically, this drug does a couple of things. The first thing that I always remember with the GLP-1 agonist, dulaglutide, is it slows gastric emptying. So two effects that this can lead to is patients may feel a little bit more full. They may eat a little bit less, which is obviously advantageous in our type 2 diabetes patients that, you know, in general, most are overweight, or a significant majority are anyway. And then, of course, you're eating less, you're, you know, obviously potentially going to lower that blood sugar as well through that mechanism. The other primary mechanism that this drug works through is it helps to secrete insulin, and specifically that after you eat. So it helps really lower those blood sugars when blood sugars are elevated. So a couple important mechanisms on how that drug works. So again, indicated for diabetes, can be used in combination with lots of different type 2 diabetes medications. I've seen it used in clinical practice, used together in all sorts of different combinations. The one big exception is the DPP-4 inhibitors. If you remember mechanistically, these kind of work on that same pathway. They work to preserve incretin, which promotes that fullness and that type of thing. So DPP-4s essentially work in the same pathway. I consider it kind of analogous to using an ACE and an ARB together for hypertension. So that's something you wouldn't do either. So again, using dulaglutide with DPP-4 inhibitors is not recommended. All right, so let's touch on adverse effects a little bit. So with that slowing of gastric emptying, what I usually think of that's going to come with that is I think of, you know, that food not, you know, going through as quickly. This can result in some stomach upset and some nausea particularly, and potentially vomiting if it's significant enough. So that's definitely the primary adverse effect I think about. Diarrhea has been reported, some other things, GI, have been reported as well. But I would say that nausea is really going to be the primary one you're going to see out there in clinical practice. Low blood sugar, that's what we're trying to do with this medication, but particularly hypoglycemic risk, symptomatic hypoglycemic risk in patients on sulfonylureas and insulin when we use those combinations. So keep an eye out that on that. One, when you start this medication, dulaglutide, it might be really important to keep an eye on your insulin dose and your sulfonylurea dose. You may need to back off on those medications kind of depending upon where those blood sugars are falling and obviously how the patient is feeling as well. Boxed warning on thyroid C-cell tumors, medullary thyroid carcinoma risk, has been reported in rats, and there's also been case reports here and there. So if a patient's got a, you know, personal history of MTC, that's medullary thyroid carcinoma, or potentially a family history, definitely a situation where you might want to avoid the use of dulaglutide here. Other things that I think about, I mentioned that slowing of gastric emptying. So in diabetes, gastroparesis is a common complication. Maybe not common, but it can definitely happen and definitely is associated with diabetes. So if we slow that gut down further, that could potentially lead to a significant worsening of symptoms. So what I look for is if I see a patient maybe taking metoclopramide, rarely I've seen chronic erythromycin, two medications that can be used for gastroparesis. If we're adding a GLP-1 agonist, you got to remember that could exacerbate that thing. So just a little tip looking at the medication list, if I see those medications on board, the adverse effect profile from dulaglutide may be a little bit worse in that type of patient. Rarely there's been cholelithiasis, gallbladder issues, pancreatitis reported. So again, good to just keep an eye on that, keep tabs on that, recognize maybe if patients are at abnormally high risk for some of those issues. There have been reports of dulaglutide and the GLP-1 agonist in general contributing to that issue. Okay, so there is, as of fall 2020, there is some newer information out on dulaglutide that has been a recent change that I wanted to mention, and it's one of the reasons why I wanted to do a podcast on this drug specifically. So historically, we've only had two doses, so 0.75 milligrams and 1.5 milligrams. Well, FDA did approve two additional doses, 3 milligrams and 4.5 milligrams. All these doses are given sub-Q. The main points I want you to remember, at least in my research and what I've seen, the drug is flat priced. So if you've got a patient and we go up from 1.5 to 3 milligrams or 3 milligrams eventually to 4.5, that pricing is looking like, at least at this point in time, going to remain the same. So that is nice. You know, if you want a little bit more A1C lowering, you're likely not going to cost the patient any more money than it would, you know, if they were on 0.75 milligrams versus 3 milligrams or 4.5 milligrams. So I think that's a helpful thing to remember. With insurance coverages, things can always be wacky there too, so it's important to keep that in mind. Those higher doses, how much more benefit do we get? From the literature, it appears like, A1C lowering is maybe in the 0.2 to 0.3 range. So it's not a huge reduction. And we also, generally, most side effects are dose dependent. So we're also likely going to encounter maybe a little bit more side effects with those higher doses too. So way I think about it, if you've got a patient that's close to goal or where you want them to be, we may just be able to increase dose. If you've got a patient on, let's say, 1.5 milligrams there, if you've got a patient that's pretty far out of control, even on, and we've assured adherence and all that sort of stuff, and you've got an A1C of, 9, 9.5, 10 still, going from 1.5 milligrams up to 3 milligrams dosing is probably not going to cut it as far as bringing their A1C down. So, how clinically significant the increase is, I would say it's a low to moderate A1C lowering effect by increasing those doses. It's not, definitely not substantial. You're not going to likely get a drop in your A1C by 1 point by going up from 1.5 to 3, for example, in, again, most situations anyway. one other thing I did want to mention about the dosing, this is once weekly dosing. So that is definitely a nice thing, as long as your patients can, remember one day a week and that type of thing. And that's, because of the kinetics, the half-life of this medication is 5 days. So that's significantly long there. All right, so let's take a quick break from our sponsor, and I'll finish up with drug interactions. If you're in the market for pharmacist board certification study material, like pharmacotherapy, geriatrics, medication therapy management exam, or ambulatory care exam, definitely go check out meded101.com/store. If you're a pharmacy student, we've also got NAPLEX content. If you're a healthcare professional in general, we've got Amazon books, Audible books, and always remember you can get your first Audible book for free by going through meded101.com/store as long as you've never tried an Audible book in the past. So go check out all those resources, support the sponsor, help keep this podcast free and educational for all to enjoy. Again, meded101.com/store. So finishing up on drug interactions, with the GLP-1 agonists in general, I would say they're pretty low on the totem pole of medications that cause drug interactions. So that's definitely a good thing. You know, they don't really impact the CYP enzyme system. So your CYP3A4, your CYP2D6. So we don't, you know, have to worry about that quite as much. The things I worry about most are basically additive effects. So, you know, the blood sugar lowering effect. So keeping an eye on, you know, insulin, keeping an eye on sulfonylureas, and really keeping close tabs on that risk for hypoglycemia. Obviously, adding agents that can counteract the blood sugar lowering effect. So classic example there being corticosteroids. That can obviously have an interplay negatively with blood sugar management there. And then, of course, altering GI motility. So if we have a lot of drugs on board that slow the GI tract, so anticholinergics, you know, your tricyclic antidepressants, your, you know, older antihistamines like your Benadryls, the GLP-1 agonist, dulaglutide, could add on to that effect. In addition, it could oppose the potential benefit, which I kind of talked about before, of a drug like metoclopramide if we're using that to stimulate or to treat gastroparesis. So a few drug interactions there. Again, when I cover drug interactions, it's not an all-encompassing list. It's just some of the things that come up in clinical practice, more common, and may show up on, you know, board exams and pharmacology exams and things like that. So, yeah, with that, I'm going to wrap up the podcast for today. If you enjoyed the show, leave a rating, review on iTunes, share us with a colleague, a friend, a student, a preceptor. Definitely share us with your fellow healthcare professionals. Thanks so much for listening. Take care and have a great rest of your day.